Hello, my name is Kennedy Sam, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU. On this program, we sit down with creatives and community leaders to discuss some cool things that are happening in our city. Tomorrow, February 1st, marks the beginning of Black History Month, a time when we as a nation celebrate the achievements and honor the role African Americans have played in shaping our country's history. Today we are sitting down with local leaders and the movers and shakers from the Syntex African American Chamber of Commerce, Rachel E. Pate and John Bible. Later on, we will hear from Dr. Bronwyn Forbe, Associate Professor of Music Voice at MCC and organizer of their first Black History Month concert. Later on, we'll hear a segment from David and Art with David Smith. First, I'd like to welcome Rachel E. Pate, VP of Economic Development, and John Bible, President CEO of the Syntex African American Chamber. Thank you guys for joining us today.
Thank you for having us, Kennedy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to be here.
So today is the last day of January. How has 2020 been treating you guys so far?
Well, 2020 has absolutely gotten off to a fast start. We come off the holiday after New Year's week, and we went right to work. And we didn't pause. We didn't stop and gloat about anything we did in 2019. We knew that 2020 would be filled with a lot of activity. So we've been on tours, Dr. Pepper Museum, Caterpillar, you name it. We've been everywhere. Animal Bird Control Center. We've just been taking this month as we go, and we've just been busy because we know we have a lot to do for this year. And so we're excited. And so we wanted to get out to a fast start.
That's awesome. We're going to give you guys a little bit of time to gloat on 2019 later because I want to hear it.
Absolutely.
So as longtime Waco residents, can you guys share some background on how you became associates with the chamber and then later on transitioned into leadership?
Sure. Well, I'm born and raised in Waco, so I'm a Waco boy. I'm a Waco native, went to university, high school, graduated. I even spent time at MCC for a couple of years, transferred, went to Baylor University, graduated, financial major, and then ended up working here in Waco and never left, which is a good thing. I was financial advisor for the last 16 years. So being able to understand and know community has been a great help. I think I met Miss LaVita Brown, which is our former president, back in 2008. I was speaking at a luncheon, and she heard me, and she thought it would be a great idea for me to be part of the Syntex African American Chamber of Commerce. And so I said, yes, as a financial advisor, you just want to be around as many people as possible.
Right.
So I didn't quite know where the chamber was, what they did, that kind of thing. But after being on the board, I became the treasurer, and then from the treasurer, I became the chairman. And then, unfortunately, last year, Ms. LaVita Brown had to retire early due to health reasons. And from that point, I stepped in that role and assumed the president of the chamber. So I went from telling Ms. LaVita yes or no on certain things when she came and presented it to the board to begging the board, please, can we do this? Can we do this? So it's been great. It's been great.
And I think my story is a little similar to John's. I grew up in Waco, so I'm born and raised. Several generations of my family have lived here, mostly a South Waco resident, but have a lot of roots in the East Waco community as well. Longtime member of Tolliver Chapel Church and also a university high school graduate like John. So go Trojans. But even spent time as a Waco High student. So I have love for my community throughout, from the residents that I know who are neighbors to people I've seen at church, people I used to go to school with. And I think that was a big part of what kept me in the community. I had a lot of ties with family and friends, and not a desire to really look for something outside of Waco. So I did attend MCC. And at that time that I was there, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. It took me a while to find my legs and find something that I was passionate about. And that's when the chamber kind of came to me. At the time that I was a new mom and I was looking for a way to really solidify my roots here for my child and build a legacy for us, I was looking just in, I guess, in prayer and in faith for an opportunity that I felt would benefit me and my son, but benefit the community. And at the time, just before working for the chamber, I was doing private home health care, and I had a client in East Waco. And I would go through the neighborhood near Hood Street and cross Waco Drive and go over to the neighborhood of Carver area, and I would just see things happening. And on those drives, I would think, what's going on? And who is there in the community that I can look to tell me what's going on? And so for me, I didn't see anyone that looked like me representing the interests that I had and speaking about the things that I wanted to know of. And as I said, through faith, through prayer, and just being in the right place at the right time, the opportunity to join the chamber came to me through a mentor of mine, Miss Linda Weaver. She's our former ambassador chair of the chamber and very good friend to Miss Brown. And she and I had known each other since I was in elementary school. I went to school with her daughter. And so when I ran into her, she asked me what I was doing. And I told her, hey, this is the work that I'm in. She said, well, I think there's something greater for you. So we began working together on creative projects at the Brazos Event Center, hosting paint nights and networking opportunities. And when the position became available for assistant to the president at the chamber, she brought it to my attention. I had an opportunity to meet Ms. Brown, what would be the second time of me meeting her, because I had also been an entrepreneur and done jewelry, made things for myself and for clients, and met her when the chamber first took her as a leader. And so coming back through those doors and sitting with her then, it was a different atmosphere. I was different. The chamber was different. And I think we were at a point where she needed someone like me to come in and train to understand what the chamber needed. So I started as assistant to the president in 2016. Before the year was up, I was promoted to public relations in Esther's Closet, and I've made my way up through VP of Membership and now VP of Economic Development.
So for the last 15 or so years, the chamber has been a pillar in our community. Can you explain what the role of the organization is?
Well, to define the role of just a chamber in itself, it's simply an organization made up of business members, and the chamber advocates or furthers the interests of the business community. For us, it goes a little deeper when you talk about economic development. You have the business side of economic development, and you have community development. And so we want to make sure that we pay attention to both components of economic development here in our community. And so from a business side, we want to make sure that we not only promote people that want to aspire to become entrepreneurs and start businesses, but we also want to think about our current businesses that are already here. They are just as important. And we want to make sure that we not only help expand those businesses and get them to that next level, but we want to make sure that we retain them and make them part of all the development that is actually going on here in Waco, in the Waco community. And then there's the community development side. We want to develop leaders. So you have youth development, you have workforce development, all those things that are essential to preparing people to even have a business. And so we want to focus on all those things. And so it becomes a task, because we're not a huge office, but we do a lot of things, and we do a lot of important things that we know that's going to be a great asset to the Waco community.
With this recent explosion of Waco as a whole and new businesses and entrepreneurship, and especially all the businesses that are coming into East Waco, what kind of partnerships have you guys blossomed in the last year or so?
Well, when I came in May 1st, we took what we call a more of an outside-in approach to a strategic planning for the office. Instead, most of the time when you come in as a president, you look at what you have within the organization and you focus on trying to build the organization within. But we started on the outside. Mm-hmm. We wanted to build relationships, because we felt that if we were going to connect the community with the necessary resources for them to have in order to prosper during this particular time, then we needed resources. We needed partners. We needed organizations that were going to help us get to that point. And so all we did last year was, we call it a tour. We felt like rock stars.
Right.
Every day we had 3 to 4 interviews, interviewing with different organizations, finding out what they did, what their purpose was, what their mission, their vision. And we were sharing our vision and mission with them as well. And we just developed great partnerships throughout the Waco community, not just the East Waco community, but throughout the whole Waco. Central Texas African American Chamber of Commerce is our name, and that's what we want. We want to be in partnerships with everyone throughout the Waco community, not just just our East Waco community. So
you ask about what new partnerships. I think one of the greatest partnerships that we've been able to start experiencing and that will be a community partner is TFNB, Your Bank for Life. There has not been a financial institution in East Waco in a very long time, and you can see that in the community, in the neighborhood. And so to have them come into our office and speak with us and ask us about the needs of the community, and not just what can we do through the chamber to support the community, what other organizations should we look at, what type of community agreements, what type of services should we be offering to the residents here that makes an impact in this community that's necessary. And they are not the only ones, but I would say that they have done something unprecedented in that community, and we're looking forward to the way that that unfolds and reveals itself in 2020. But the universities, the school districts, the nonprofits, all of those people are welcome to come into the chamber and actually find out how we can support one another.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm so glad to say that we were part of that, your tour stop.
Yeah.
We really enjoyed having lunch with you guys and just sharing more about what our programs can do for, you know, other artists that might be minorities or not have the knowledge of the resources that we have. And so we are very grateful to have you guys as our partners as well. And just what you brought to our apprenticeship this summer, we are still very thankful for that.
which is fun. The fun work is honestly when you get to meet the people and talk to people. What it is when you have an organization such as the Chamber that is membership-driven and volunteer-driven is who's going to execute these plans. We can go out and create all the wonderful ideas and programs and opportunities, but someone has to do the legwork. So right now we are balancing having those planning conversations and then getting back to the office to put it down in concrete and see how it actually rolls out and happens.
And you really don't know what is going on unless you go out and actually experience and talk to these different organizations that are out there. You miss out. And I think at one time the Chamber kind of worked as a silo, and we've seen that wasn't a great way to run an organization. Not saying anything about anyone's leadership, but just saying we find it so much easier when you facilitate and you have these partners, and you can do so much more because the job is so important and the work is a lot. And so you can't do it by yourself. And when we realize that, then it makes it easier to go out and speak to these different organizations and say, hey, what can we do together to make this thing work? What can we do together to make real positive change around here?
So looking forward into the new year, what are some of you guys' key focuses?
Oh, wow. The new year, I would say, and I know Rachel probably has her things that she's looking forward to, but I'm definitely looking forward to some contracting workshops that we have planned. We're going to do roundtable contracting workshops, which will be special because it will not be more of a educational piece, but it will actually be where we get minority contractors in the room with actual general contractors and organizations that are doing development here in Waco. And they get to ask the right questions, to ask the meaningful questions about how can I be part of this development? How can I be part of these bids that are going on? What do I need to do to make sure that my business as well be part of this prosperity that is going on out here? And so those contracting workshops are going to be special, especially coming to when it comes to hubs and minorities that are out here trying to figure this thing out. So they don't get to hear it from secondhand information. They're going to actually be in front of the people that make those decisions. So,
and I'll just quickly add on to that. John is very detailed and specific. Me, I am the creative person. So I am about the emotion and the feeling. More than anything, I think we planned our calendar to be very intentional about meeting the needs of businesses and our members. But I feel like what that does and what people don't see is the unity that is created. The reason why I came to find the leaders that speak and introduce people to those leaders, the relationships that will be built from working together, the things and the projects that we will do together with partners, and how that strengthens our community.
Yeah, and one of those things being, you know, last week we had a meeting speaking about Black History Month and all the events that we have going on. And I was just so honored to be invited to join that. And it was just so cool seeing all of the cool things happening. So can you guys share a little bit of what the Chamber has going on for Black History Month and then what other people in the community also have?
Yes. John, since I have the paper, I will speak. Just to highlight that, that is an important part, that you had multiple people in one room who represented a wide variety of interests and organizations coming together for a common goal. So what we've come up with is an opportunity to promote all of the Black history celebrations throughout the community. This calendar is growing right now as we speak, as we find out and learn of different activities, but just some of the things that are going on. The Chamber will be hosting a Black Business Networking event. We have nailed down the date. John, what is that date?
February the 20th, I believe.
We'll be at True Jamaica Restaurant and we'll do business networking. But some of the other things that are going on are like MCC's Black History Month concert. I'm sure Ms. Bronwell will tell you more about that. But the Family and Faith Film Festival, documentaries, movies that matter. There will also be an NAACP scholarship banquet and new and exciting things like a Black culture and community costume party where you can actually, yes.
A costume
see, eyebrows
party.
Are raised. You can't see that on the radio, but eyebrows are raised and eyes are big, where you can come up as an iconic hero or someone that has, you know, really provided some type of example that you want to represent that character and have a costume party with it. So new things as well as some traditional events, but there's something for everyone that will be going on in Black history. And we just want to be able to communicate a community calendar consistently of what organizations are doing and how partners are working together to bring cultural experiences to the community.
And that was special last weekend. Like you said, you were part of it as well. And just to see, I think it was roughly 10 to 12 different representations of organizations there at one table. And it was the unity that you felt in the room where people were telling all the great things and events and endeavors that they were going to do. And then everyone was supporting it and everyone was wanted to be a part of and said, hey, what can I do to help to make this successful? And this is the first time in a while where we have something under one umbrella to be able to say, hey, this is one big celebration. We're not worried about whose name is on what. We just want everything to be successful and enjoy the meaning and the purpose behind what we're doing in that celebration for this month of February.
Well, that's awesome. I'm really looking forward to all of these events. Thank you, Rachel and John, for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. And would love to come back again.
Yes. So you can find a full list of the Black History Month events and more content based on this episode on creativewaco.org/blog. Here's David Smith with David and Art.
I still vividly remember the student a few years ago who breezily told me that she had never seen a movie made before 1995. I did a very poor job of masking my reaction. But whatever amount of dismay I may have registered seemed to affect her not in the least. Her light insouciance was thoroughly insulated by the certainty that she could not have missed anything worthwhile by not having seen old movies. Even now, I relate that exchange to my classes when we talk about culture from the past and why some of it is worth their knowing. All this got me thinking about how our relentless focus on the present and on what's popular today is continually building a wall between younger people and things they would be fortunate to know. It doesn't have to be that way. At one time, it could be taken for granted that even young people would have a pretty good knowledge of art and culture that existed before they were born. Anyone who remembers Mad Magazine will tell you that it was hardly an arbiter of high culture. But at its peak of popularity in the mid-1970s, it could have served as a checklist of cultural institutions that were worth knowing about. To understand its humor, one had to be familiar with a lot of stuff. For instance, one needed to know melodies as varied as George M. Cohan's You're a Grand Old Flag, written in 1906, and Leonard Bernstein's Tonight, written in 1957, to get the parodies when alternate lyrics were provided. Even if the writers were making fun of something, they could safely assume that their readership would know what on earth they were talking about when they mashed up the TV show Hazel with Eugene O'Neill's avant-garde play Strange Interlude from 1928. E.D. Hirsch Jr. is a teacher and the author of a celebrated 1987 book called Cultural Literacy. He says that cultural literacy, unlike expert knowledge, is made up of things that are meant to be shared by everyone. Such knowledge, he says, enables grandparents to communicate with grandchildren, Southerners with Midwesterners, whites with blacks, Asians with Hispanics, and Republicans with Democrats, no matter where they were educated. Art has never been simply a private good. Art is a means of communication. Those works that somehow communicate better than others become classics, and for each generation that discovers them, they remain as fresh as when they were created. Being culturally literate will introduce you to wonderful things, from a Beethoven string quartet to Muddy Waters' 12-bar blues, from a Langston Hughes poem to Eugene O'Neill's plays, and even to some classic movies, some of which may have been made before you were born. But it all requires being open to the past, and the cultural inertia today, however, is sadly against it.
You are listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. We are back and sitting down with Associate Professor of Music, Voice at MCC, opera singer, and a Creative Waco board member, Dr. Bronwyn Forbe. She is also coordinating the first Black History Month concert at MCC coming up this February. Thank you, Bronwyn, for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Kennedy. Happy to be here.
So I think you have the distinction of being the first opera singer and the first board member that we've had on the show so far.
Wow.
So welcome.
Thank you. I'm honored.
So I'd like to start this off by learning a little bit more about yourself. So you were born in Durban, South Africa.
Yes, that's correct.
So were you growing up in the time during apartheid and everything?
Yes, that is correct. I went to segregated schools all the way through high school. I graduated from high school in 1994, which was the year of our first democratic elections. And I got to see Nelson Mandela come out of jail as a kid, you know, watching TV. My first time being in a classroom with people of all races was my first year in college.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So how did that kind of shape your life? Like, was it, I mean, you know, when you think of segregation, you think of, you know, all the things that happened in America in the 60s sometimes, but how is it living in that?
You know, it was really a very interesting time. It was a bit scary at times. I remember, you know, armored vehicles riding up and down the road when I was a child. We had a curfew. We couldn't play outside beyond 6 o'clock because, you know, of that sort of thing. But at the same time, we actually, the hometown that I grew up in, Durban, is a very unusual place. There are people of all different races that, as much as I grew up during apartheid, you know, we had friends from different races and we often shared food. For example, if it was Diwali, you know, there were different segregated neighborhoods and some of our Indian friends would bring over Diwali sweetmeats. So we'd go watch the fireworks and, you know, it was, things were a little looser for us in Durban, which is by the coast. So while, you know, the bigger picture was a bit scary at times, you know, we actually, I think a big part of what led to me integrating into the multicultural aspect of the city really came from music. And I'm so happy that I've been able to continue with it.
Yeah, so you are an opera singer,
yes,
a soprano.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find your passion and the ability to sing opera?
Well, I actually registered for a commerce degree at first. And then I auditioned at my undergraduate university and I was accepted on the same day, even though I didn't know how to read theory, music theory at the time. I was accepted for my audition and I thought, you know, I just would like to try. And I was so grateful that they gave me the opportunity. When I finished at my undergrad in Durban at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, I obtained a Fulbright and I went to study, do my master's at Manhattan School of Music in New York. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I went to SMU. And then after that, I went to the University of Cincinnati where I did my doctorate. And that's where I met my husband as well. You know, the opportunity to do opera and to perform in different places around the world really, I mean, I can't tell you how that changed my life. And it's something that I like to try to instill in my students now that I work at MCC is the wonderful opportunities and the joys of collaborating with people from different backgrounds, you know, and creating something that's really beautiful that moves people. Yeah. So I think that, you know, my teachers instilled that in me, and I'm just privileged to be able to do that, you know, with my students too.
Yeah. So what is the process to training and becoming an opera singer?
Oh, gosh. well, you have to be, you actually have to have a good sense of languages. You need to know more about music theory, music history, style. You also need to be able to communicate the text. So you do have to have a sense of what things mean, you know, in different languages, what the text means. So, for example, where I work right now at MCC, I teach classical voice. I also teach musical theater voice. And then I teach Italian, French, German, and English pronunciation for singers. So that's imperative, right? But then you have to also develop acting skills. And so it's a very complicated process. But I have, you know, I have to tell you, it's a lot of fun. It really is.
So as a teacher, what are your students, what do they want to do as they learn these voice classes?
You know, many of them want to perform. Some of them want to be music educators. Some of them are still finding themselves like you, like you do, you know. But a lot of them want to be better. They want to discover what their authentic self wants to do and to be out in the world. And for me, that's finding that's the best thing.
So you are coordinating MCC's first Black History Month concert under the theme We Have Come This Far, An Inspirational Evening.
Yes. I know it's a long title, but...
I love it. So what inspired you to create this concert?
Kennedy, honestly, it was my students. Mm-hmm. I had a couple students that knocked at my door one day and they said, you know, Dr. Forbe, we've realized that we have not had a Black History Month concert at MCC before. Would you like to be our faculty sponsor and help coordinate this? And I said, wait a second, we haven't, because I'm still relatively new. And I said, absolutely, let's do it. What do you need from me? and so with the help of the students, we you know, decided to make it as inclusive an event as possible, something that allows us to use the diverse student population at MCC, you know, because we also have diverse genres that are being taught. We have classical, musical theater, opera, jazz.
Wow.
There's even a hip hop group. Yeah. And all of these genres are going to be represented on the concerts. So they're over 2 days. They're going to be 1 hour in duration each. You know, we are finalizing the program by the end of January. We should have decided what we're going to be doing exactly. And, you know, they were just so excited to have the opportunity to collaborate with friends, because that's what it's about, yeah. Bringing people together, sharing history. So the concert, what's the basic arc of it is to start off with spirituals and move chronologically through the various you know, influences that we have from Black musicians,
right.
African-American musicians from the very beginning, so that we cover a wide range and there'll be something for everyone.
Yeah.
The students are also learning to be leaders in the community. That's the other important thing that got me really excited about it, because I think that, you know, when you share your stories, you also help build that wonderful collaborative spirit that assists in that community making process.
So the concert will be on February 6th and 7th.
Yes.
Will it be the same lineup on both days, or will each day have a different like theme?
That's a very good question. We're still deciding.
Yeah.
So you know, it may be that we have the same, but it might change. The cool thing, though, is that we also have a wonderful buy-in from people in the community, local artists. We have a painter, you know, and doing creative work, exhibiting the artwork in the lobby. We've got some authors coming to talk about their works, and we've got a poetry presentation in the lobby before the concert. You know, we want to be able to include as many of our students and as many genres as possible. So the program at the moment is flexible, but it will be decided by the end of the month.
Yeah, well, that is awesome.
We'll share that with you, Kennedy.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited for this. And, you know.
Thank you so much for having me here, Kennedy. It's a pleasure.
The performance will be February 6th and 7th at 7:30 p.m. in the BPAC on MCC's campus. Tickets are $8 for adults, $5 for non-MCC students, and all MCC students and faculty are free. However, proceeds will benefit the Music Students Associations. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. Catch the next episode on Friday, February 28th for more deep dives into local arts. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Thanks for tuning in.